let's get started. Yes, please turn off phones. That will be helpful. Okay. Topic four this afternoon is to wrap up Perek Daled, wrap up chapter four. We already went through the chapter, but there are a couple of closing notes on the chapter, and then to start with chapter 5, which is a much shorter and more straightforward chapter, certainly, but a lot to teach us. So, if you recall, the chapter started with the decision to take the Aron to war. We went to battle against the Plishtim, lost the first battle badly, decided to bring the Aron as a way to get God to help us. That doesn't work. The war is lost, the Aron is captured, Chavni and Pinchas are killed, word gets back to Eli, their father, that aside from their death, that the war has been lost and that the Aron has been taken. It seems that the news about the Aron is what shocks him the most, and that probably ties in somewhat to what we talked about in terms of why they took the Aron in the first place, the sense of invulnerability, the sense that the Aron, God is with the Aron, of course it's going to be fine. So Eli at that point falls back on his chair, and he dies. You know, we actually, when we read it, it's funny, because I'm looking back at my notes now, when we read it, we emphasized the intensification in the sentence towards the loss of the Aron and how his concern is for the Aron, and we painted it as as an issue of him being more concerned for the Aron. That was how Ralbag said it. But I actually wonder if that isn't the answer. It's not so much that he was more concerned for the Aron, but that he was shocked by the loss of the Aron. He wasn't shocked that Chafni and Pinchas died in war. That happens. That does happen, and he has a prediction that they're going to die on the same day.
Did he know that they'd taken the
Aron? So we aren't given clear information, but yes. Actually, no, we are. We are told that he was waiting to see what was going to happen with it, so yes.
Maybe he was shocked because when Chafni and Pinchas, he expected the Aron never.
But that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That they the same thought process that led them to take the Aron led him to be stunned by the news that this was that this had happened. But it's true. You know what? I'm going to go back now, because go back to sentence 13, and it actually says he was upset and he was worried for the Aron. So that's Rabag's basis. You could actually read it both ways. You could say that he is most concerned for the Aron, and that shows that really that's where his heart is. You could also add, though, that he's shocked by the loss of the Aron in a way that, in that he's confident, as they all are, that they're going to win. So we had that, and then we also had the news come to the wife of Pinchas. She died in childbirth. We talked about that last time. And what we wanted to do was just go back quickly to something we introduced last time. The news was brought to the Jews and to Eli. By whom? Who brought the news? So, not a messenger. Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12. Ish Binyamin, a man of Binyamin. So take a look, please, at source number one on your sheet. Medrash Shmuel. Vayaretz Ish Binyamin, Ze Shaul. That was Shaul. And then the Medrash brings you three different views as to what exactly Shaul had to do that day in order to carry the message. Rabbi Levi says, Shishim mil halach Shaul ba'osu hayom. He says he ran 60 mil that day. A mil is roughly a kilometer. A mil is roughly a kilometer. So 60 kilometers. How? Where do you get that number? Because b'marachahaya, he was at the battlefield, v'shamasha nishbu aluchas, and he heard that the Plishtim had taken the tablets. V'halach v'chotfan miyad Goliath zuba, and he grabbed them from Goliath, and he came back. Now there's a lot we're going to have to talk about within this, but look at that. Shaul is there at the battle, and we noted last time that that's not unthinkable in terms of chronology. It's certainly thinkable that Shaul could have been a warrior in this fight. But he grabs the luchos from Goliath. That's really remarkable. He's also involved. Well, these are Luchos.
But Goliath came much later in Shaul's life when David came about.
Not that much later.
No?
No, think about it. Shaul is only king for 2 years. Yeah, 2 or 3 years. So, and he is still king when the whole battle with Goliath happens.
Well, how long before the king?
So we talked about that a little bit, and we explained that it's vague. We have to get to Perek Vav, and you'll see why it's vague. There's an unclear passage there about a passage of 20 years, and it's not clear when those 20 years are. But this story could be, happening 13 years, is it? I think 13 years before Shaul becomes king. It's possible that the time frame is that short. That's not what's fascinating. It's not an issue of can it be. It's an issue of why would it be? Why are you putting Goliath into this picture at all? Rabbi Yaakov Elman, Olav Hashalom, was a professor of mine when I was at YU. He's well known for any number of things, among them the Living Nach. But he did a lot of work on Parshanut, on explaining Tanakh. And I think he was the one who I heard coined the phrase the law of conservation of biblical personalities. The idea that when you have people who are anonymous in Tanakh, we'll tend to associate them with people we already know. Rather than, and even sometimes we will have the Gemara say that people you do know of, they're actually the same as somebody else. So Ezra is Malachi and Hatach is Daniel. Yeah, it was sort of condensing down all of the identities. But we have to figure out what Goliath is doing here in the Medrash.
The power of the Plishtim was because of Goliath. Because in other words, Hashem not have made...
One way to look at it is to say that if the Plishtim were successful, as Sandy says, it must be because they had an ace in the hole, so to speak. They had somebody powerful. Random Plishtim couldn't have done this.
We have the Mishkan. Could have been our ace in the hole.
What Diane says is the response. Right? What Diane says, I think, is accurate as the response, which is to say, the whole point here is that Hashem wanted the Mishkan gotten rid of. Hashem wanted them to lose the Aron. So it shouldn't have needed a Goliath. Eddie, what were you going to say?
I'm going to say, whatever is written here, Rabbi Levi, is this written in the...
This is written in the Midrash on Sefer Shmuel.
Somebody decided it was
Shmuel. No, that's not the way Midrash works. The way Midrash works, and this is a much bigger topic for which I could lecture for days and days and days and not give you a word in edgewise, because this is a topic that I talk about a lot, Midrash is based on the ear of the rabbis when they hear a pasuk and they hear a sentence and something doesn't quite fit, and what they'll do is they'll draw on elements of text in order to show... This is the narrative. This is what's going on. This is what explains the strange element in that pasuk, in that verse. So, for example, just because I gave a shiur on it this morning, we talked about the yeshiva of Shem ve'Ever, Shem is the son of Noach, and Ever is Shem's great grandson, and they're supposed to be teachers of Torah. What's your evidence that Shem would have been teaching anybody Torah? So, one of the pieces of evidence is, when Noah has that whole incident after the flood, where he's embarrassed and exposed in his tent, he was drunk. Afterwards, when he sobers up, he says, Baruch Hashem, blessed is God, Elokei Shem, the God of Shem. That's very unusual. In Tanakh, we find people describe Hashem as their God. We find people describe Hashem as the God of their ancestors. I don't know of any other case in Tanakh where someone describes God as the God of their child. And what it's telling us is there is a known relationship between Shem and Hashem, which continues in the next pasuk, where he talks about Hashem. He says Hashem should give a bracha to Yefet, and Yefet should stick with Shem. He believes that Shem is some kind of a model. There's more to say about Yeshivat Shem Ve'Ever. I'm only bringing one little piece to show you the way Midrash works. Midrash in that case is the rabbi is looking at a pasuk that says the god of shame and saying, well, something must be up. Shame has to have some kind of a religious function in this family and in this era. So here, the question you have to ask is not, so, you know, what does the Medrash say, or even, you know, who wrote it? The question you have to ask is, what's motivating the Midrash? Why did the Midrash say this? What did the Midrash see in the Pasuk or in the story that made it say, oh, of course this is Shaul, and of course that's Goliath? The Midrash is not making something up out of whole cloth. It's picking up on something. And the question is, what is it that this Midrash is picking up on? That's what I want to know. Some of it we can answer now. Some of it's going to have to wait until we actually get to the story of Goliath in the 17th parak. So you're going to have to remember this for a while. But in any case, that's one piece of this. That's this Midrash, which puts, and I didn't go through it for you, but you see this whole discussion about all the running that the Ish Binyamin has to do. And was he first in the city, and then he ran out to the battlefield, and he came back? Was he in the battlefield, and he came back, and then he ran out again, and then he came back again? 60, 100, 180, the numbers are not as important for our purposes. But what is it that this Midrash is picking up on? Why does the Midrash say that? Side note on this, but an important side note. The Rashi, did I bring the Rashi here? No, I brought it from Radak. It's, sorry?
You have Rashi
here. No, but I brought Radak here instead of bringing Rashi for this. Don't worry about it. Take a look at source number two.
Do you have an extra sheet?
I gave out all my sheets. So, take a look at source number two. Radak quotes a view, which in fact Rashi brings. Darshubo, they have taught, they, the authors of this Midrash, Shehuaya Shaul ben Kish, this is King Shaul, Shechatav haluchos miad Goliath haplishti, that he grabbed the luchos, the tablets, from Goliath, Ubarachlo, and ran away. So then he quotes the Medrash, and then he says, come on. He says, it is extremely unlikely to think that anyone took the Luchos out of the Aron. Why? He says, just having the Aron caused harm to the Plishtim. We haven't gotten there yet, but we're going to find out in chapter 5 that the Plishtim suffered terribly just by having the Aron, let alone taking out the Luchos, right? Before Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just having the Aron there is devastating. The Kolshkenim Sholchu Yadbo, how much more so if they actually extended a hand to it? In fact, when the Aron first comes back, it goes to Beit Shemesh, and the people of Beit Shemesh suffer as a result of having the Aron. Now, the truth is, he's not being fair there, because the people of Beit Shemesh are punished for the way they handle the Aron. It isn't simply that Aaron is present and in trouble. You could say Shaul is doing something positive. He's grabbing the luchos and bringing them back because he doesn't want them in the hands of the plishtim. So that part I don't find as convincing as an argument. But Radak says overall, I think this whole story is a strange story. This business about him grabbing the luchos, he's not so sold on that idea. He's not quarreling with the identification of the Ish Binyamin as Shaul. His problem is the luchos piece of the story.
You don't need it. You could still tell the story without the luchos part, and it would still make perfect sense.
Yes. The only question would be, I mean, this piece of the Midrash is, I think, a much more philosophical point, which is, can it be that God would allow the luchos to be held by the plishtim? I think that may be what motivates that. Like, can they really have had them? Yeah.
Didn't people actually die from touching the Aron, and how?
So that's exactly what he's asking. Not touching the Aron. Well, there is the story of Uzzah, but the answer that could be given is what I just suggested before, which is it depends on why you're doing it.
Okay.
Alina, what are you going to say?
So the only way that they thought it was, or the Midrash thought it was Shaul, was because of Ish Binyamin?
So that's what we have to come back to, is the question of what is the basis for saying that this is Shaul? But before we do that, there's a Rashi to see. Sorry, Ruth?
I was going to say, it's not inconceivable that it was Shaul. He was, I mean, he was chosen a king for a reason.
Yes.
He was brave, and he was very tall, and, you know. So
yeah, he's brave, yeah. He's tall, he's impressive. Yes. Well, unfortunately, when we go to war, we need people who can run. That's great. A Jewish way to look at it. But take a look. Take a look at source number 3. Right, running 2 battle. That's exactly right. Take a look, please, at source number 3. This is Rashi in the 17th parak. The story with Goliath. Goliath, the 17th chapter, right. In the story with David and Goliath, David and Goliath, or David and Goliath, you could say it however you like. But I'm actually jumping ahead in my Shmuel just to read it from inside. The story there, remember the Jews are fighting against the Plishtim, and then a particular man of great size, this is a giant, comes out from the Plishtim. His name is Goliath, and this is a guy who's very tall. I'm reading chapter 17, Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4. And he has this copper helmet, and he has armor that's set up in scales so that he's protected from weapons. And he has a shield of copper that's on his legs. He's got everything. And it describes his weapons and so forth. And then in Pasuk Chet, sentence 8, it says, Vayamod vayikral malchus Yisrael. He stood and he called to the Israelite camp. Vayomer, and he said to them, Lama seitzu la'aroch milchama? Why are you going out to war? Halo anochi ha'plishti. Am I not the plishti? Ve'atem avadim l'shaul. And you serve Shaul. Brulachem ish v'yered elai. Choose a man and let him come to me. So I heard, I think it was Alina, already note something here. Ha plishti. I am the Philistine. What does that mean to them? What is the Philistine to them? The answer may be the one who took the Aron. You start to see a little bit of what they're building on. Now, though, take a look at source number 3. Look at Rashi. Halo anochi haplishti. I am the Philistine. Eini lo sar me'al lo sar elef. And he's saying it as playing it down in terms of what his status is. He says, I'm not some big officer. I'm not in charge of 100 people, 1,000 people. Plishti, I'm a Philistine. Kechob and Achirim, just like any other. Ve'av al-pishon l'chamtil em kam l'chamot, although I have fought many wars for them. Ani, I am the Philistine. Harakti Chafni u'Pinchas v'shabisi es ha'aron. I'm the one who killed Chafni and Pinchas, the ones who were escorting the Aron, and I took the Aron. Vatem, and you. Now say some avadim l'Shaul. You've become slaves of Shaul. V'lo hoshi eschem mi'amav v'gvurasa. He doesn't seem to be so mighty. What has he done for you?
Well, that's why maybe Shaul that he's referencing.
Before. He references, right.
That's also
him. So I think that is a big piece of what's going on here. I think that's a big piece, but I think there's more to be said. Take a look, please, at chapter 9. Specifically, sentence 17. This is when Shmuel goes to choose a king. Yud Zayin. Okay? Actually, even before that, Pasuk Tet Zayin, I didn't notice that. 16 first. This is Hashem speaking to Shaul, to Shmuel, I should say, when Shmuel's going to go do this. He says to Shmuel, Ka'es machar, tomorrow, Eshlach Eilecha Ish Me'eretz Binyamin. I'm going to send you a man from Binyamin, and you will anoint him to lead the Jews and save my nation from the Plishtim, because I've seen my nation, they're crying out to me. Pasuk Yitzayin, sentence 17. Shmuel sees Shaul. Shmuel ra'ay Shaul v'Hashem ano, and Hashem answered him, Hinei ha'ish. Asher amarti elecha, this is the ish, about whom I told you that this is the one who was going to help my nation. Vayigash Shaul et Shmuel. Shaul goes to Shmuel, and Shmuel speaks to him. They go back and forth. And then look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, where Shaul says to him, who am I to do this? Halo ben yamini anochi. I'm just a Benjaminite. I'm just a guy from Binyamin. and we're the smallest of the tribes, which they certainly are at this point in our history, after what happened to them in Pilagish B'Givah. I find that the identification of Shaul early on as Ish and as being from Binyamin and the way it's played up may be a piece of why the Midrash says, oh, Ish Binyamin, that's Shaul. I think that's a piece of what they... I don't think it's the whole thing, but I think that's part of the evidence that they're building on. Malbim notes something else. He's not answering our question, but he does make a note on this. I didn't bring it on the sheet. Malbim suggests, you know, this is the only one who came back. They were routed at the battlefield. Right? They lost terribly to the Plishtim. There have to be thousands of people on the run. We're going to find out. It's a terrible, terrible... We already read. We read the death toll already? It was tens of thousands of people. So why is this the only one who comes back to tell the news? He says, Ish Binyamin, this is somebody special. This is not just a random person. This is somebody who, took it upon himself to go back and inform the leadership of what had happened. And that suggests that he's somebody special. That's that I think is another piece of why we look at this and say, oh, Shaul. But I think we're also meant to learn something here from these midrashim. I have a couple of ideas. First of all, Shaul is involved in a losing battle to the Plishtim. Right? That's what happens here. Shaul is involved in a losing battle to the, whatever heroic thing he did, saving the Luchos, not saving the Luchos, bringing back news, whatever it was that he did, it's a losing effort to the Plishtim. David is the one who's going to defeat the Plishtim. And not just the Plishtim, but Goliath, who took the Arab. So that you're creating an arc of sorts by identifying Ish Binyamin with Shaul. You're saying Shaul lost, David wins. But I think even deeper than that, there's an element of redemption for Shmuel, in the sense that Goliath kills Hophni and Pinchas. Who was the one who predicted that? That was Shmuel, right? That was Shmuel's prophecy. But Shmuel also coronates David, who will avenge them by killing Goliath. You follow? It's Shmuel had to be the one to engineer their downfall, but he's also the one who will avenge them through David.
Well, he crowned Shaul as well, didn't he?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I wonder if that's not part of what's going on, aside from textual pieces of it. Ish Binyamin is special, and Shaul is identified repeatedly as Ish and being from Binyamin, and the fact that the chronology works, and the fact that he stands out and does something special. I think all of those are pieces, and Goliath identifying himself as the Plishti, as though you know who he is. But I think it's also meant to teach us lessons about the arc that's going on. Arc, A-R-C, not A-R-K. The events that trigger other events and make a narrative. Ricky?
But in these drashot, there's no reference anymore to the Luchot.
In where?
In the...
Well, the ones that I brought you. No, I mean, I brought you Radak, who quotes the Midrash about the Luchot. He doesn't like it. Rashi does. It's just not this Rashi that I brought you on the sheet. Rashi does, in fact, mention.
But does he talk more about the Luchot?
Not more. No, he just quotes the Midrash. That's all he gives you. Just quotes the Midrash.
And then they just let it go.
Yeah. Jeanette.
So in the pasuk that you brought us about the Haplishti,
yeah,
when Goliath is speaking, he says, "You're serving, you know, I'm the Plishti, and you're serving Shaul." And then he says, "Send me Ish." So was he thinking, you know, send me Shaul? Shaul grabbed, somehow grabbed.
That's interesting.
But it was like a kind of a sneaky. He didn't fight him. He grabbed, somehow he grabbed the Luchos from that midrash.
Right. That's interesting.
Was he thinking maybe send me Shaul?
It's a funny idea. Yeah.
And then in the end, Shaul is too afraid and Shaul ends up sending David.
Or Shaul can't go. He's a king.
He's
a king. He's king. And David will in fact have that happen later in his career, that his men will say, "You're not allowed to go to war. We can't afford to lose you." And that's even within all the literature we have about when Shaul takes his own life. So the commentaries talk about him doing that in order to prevent a situation in which the people would come after him. So the idea of him not going isn't necessarily a matter of fear, it's responsibility. But it's an interesting idea that may be what Goliath is saying, is send me an Ish, send me Shaul, who I did this with originally.
He might have beat me a little bit last time.
Not
beat, but you know, he got the better of me, if it's true that he grabbed it from him.
Right.
He a little bit got the better, but let's do it on a real bad.
It's certainly an interesting idea.
Can it be that an Ish, a man, you know, who's got some stature?
Yes.
He's a real
the literal
man.
Read
don't
is absolutely.
Me,
right.
Me
the literal read is that. Yes. The literal
and he says a boy. Isn't that what Goliath says?
Right.
Why are you sending a boy?
The last note on this chapter, a separate point, is just the emphasis that we had at the end of the perek on the death of the wife of Pinchas. You know, the simple read of why this is brought here, the simple take of why that's there, is because it's part of the curse. It's part of the curse on the house of Eli. However, there is a practice that we have, which you see repeatedly in our history, of looking at the national impact of Churban, of devastation, and accentuating it by articulating the death of a single individual. So that Rav Soloveitchik made this point about how in the kinos on Tisha B'Av, there's a kina dedicated to this man and woman who are descendants of Rav Yishmael Kohen Gadol, and how they were taken as slaves. Or Yirmiyahu has a kina, an elegy dedicated to King Yoshiyahu. Even though so many people died, he's going to make a poem about Yoshiyahu, or, as the Gemara says, regarding Gedaliah. The fact that we grieve and we have a fast day for the death of Gedaliah, the governor, when there were so many people who died, right, emphasizes for us lessons to be learned from the death of an individual. There are multiple lessons to be learned, but one of them, I think, is that it makes it more real. It makes the devastation more real when you hear this tragic story than if you just hear tens of thousands of people died.
That's a beautiful thought.
Basically,
it says that as soon as he heard about the Ark of God, it says that he fell backwards and he died. And I wonder that he feels like he knew that his sons were going to die together. So he probably knew that they were going to die in this war, because that's the perfect, like,
maybe he
potential,
suspected.
Okay.
Maybe.
But I feel that once he learned that the reason they were dying was because of their desecration of Hashem, and the ultimate punishment which he could not handle was the loss of the Ark, because it was his fault. I think that that's where he was.
You think
from.
An issue of blaming himself at that point?
Yeah, and that
could
was
be.
More than he could. Like,
that's interesting.
Like, with them dying with their hand, but
right.
him doing nothing was his fault, and therefore the loss of the Ark.
I mean, they're also his fault in the sense that he failed to rebuke them properly.
But even if he would have rebuked them, they had done the damage.
Right.
But yes, there would have been time for Shuva. I don't know what
it's an interesting idea. So that contributes to his reaction.
Because he feels, because he heard that they died, but then as soon as he says that the Ark was taken, then that's
interesting.
I don't know.
No, it's an interesting possibility.
So are you saying that because he realized that the impact wasn't just his family, but became a national tragedy, that's what
you
think?
Right.
But it was his... I think he blaming on his lack of...
You saw how far the
ramifications... Well, obviously, the loss of the Aron is a far greater loss than any personal
individual.
Loss. So I can accept
that. Right.
The loss of the Aaron is it, I don't think it's...
So if you go back to what we had said last...
A loss as a human being. I'm being a little... Ricky, I'm being like a little bit, what you call...
Devil's advocate.
But the answer is go back to what we said last week and the week before, which is that you had 369 years of... think about what that means as a matter of time, right? Just basic time. Go back to 1650. Right? From 1650 until now, the Jews have worshipped in one central place.
Right.
That place is now gone. Right. It is destroyed. Right. A whole way of life that 369 in those days, the way that they reproduced and lived and died, you're probably talking about conservative estimate, 15, 16, 17 generations.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, this is national. And this
was on his watch.
This is an earthquake.
That was his job, kind of.
Okay, let's move on to Parakeia. Let's move on to chapter 5.